It's 4:06, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Veronica Rickard.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, proposed legislation could change the way Wisconsin schools are evaluated.
But first, winter's a great time to escape into a book, and we've got Steve Paulson with us now. He is a rabid consumer of anything with pages and words, and the executive producer of To the Best of Our Knowledge. And we're going to have him talk about a few of his recommendations. Steve, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So for your first recommendation, you've gone back to the past to a writer that you just discovered, Patrick Lee Fermor. What struck you about his writing?
That's right. Well, I had never heard of him until actually quite recently, and my mother-in-law gave one of his books to me when I was on vacation. And he's one of the great classic travel writers, British travel writer, adventurer. And there's a great backstory here. I should say that his books are just being republished now. So he lived in the middle of the last century. And so there's this flood of new books. And the story is he was expelled from high school when he was a teenager. This is in the 1930s. He ended up walking across Europe from Holland all the way across to Greece and fell in love with Greece. And later on in the 1940s, he ended up fighting in the resistance against the Germans. In fact, by this time, he was living as a shepherd, disguised as a shepherd on the island of Crete, and ended up leading a small band of soldiers and actually captured the German commander, you know, during the war there. And anyway, so he writes about all these adventures. And then one of the things that he did a little bit later on in the 1950s is he ended up traveling around to various monasteries in Europe, and it kind of transformed him. I mean, you know, he had this worldly adventurer who ends up in these very austere places. And the first place he wrote about was this Benedictine monastery, which is, it's very austere, and the code is silence, basically. And he wrote about this in a book called A Time to Keep Silence, which has just recently been republished. And would you mind if I read a passage from it?
Absolutely, please.
Okay, so this is, he's sort of reflecting on his own time there. He had gone to live there for a few months as he was working on a book, and he writes, "To begin with, I slept badly at night and fell asleep during the day, felt restless alone in my cell, and depressed by the lack of alcohol, the disappearance of which had caused a sudden halt in the customary monsoon. The most remarkable preliminary symptoms were the variations of my need of sleep. After initial spells of insomnia, nightmare, and falling asleep by day, I found that my capacity for sleep was becoming more and more remarkable, till the hours I spent in or on my bed vastly outnumbered the hours I spent awake, and my sleep was so profound that I might have been under the influence of some hypnotic drug. For 2 days, meals and the offices in the church, Mass and Vespers, were almost my only lucid moments. Then began an extraordinary transformation. This extreme lassitude dwindled to nothing. Night shrank to 5 hours of light, dreamless and perfect sleep followed by awakenings full of energy and limpid freshness. No demands, once I had emerged from that flood of sleep, were made upon my nervous energy. There were no automatic drains, such as conversation at meals, small talk, catching trains, or the 100 anxious trivialities that poison everyday life. Even the major causes of guilt and anxiety had slid away into some distant limbo, and not only failed to emerge in the small hours as tormentors, but appeared to have lost their dragonish validity. This new dispensation left 19 hours a day of absolute and godlike freedom."
Wow.
So he's a very elegant writer.
Was a dragon-like validity, something like that?
Yes.
He sounds fantastic. I'm only troubled slightly by the moral, which is, for an exciting life, get kicked out of high school.
Right. Well, you know, you might as well do the best with the cards that have been given you.
Yeah.
So it was just it was such a pleasure to discover this book and a new writer, which, I didn't know anything about.
Yeah, he's beautiful. So what have you got next? Someone else who's thinking deeply, I think, a novelist.
A novelist, yes. Richard Powers, who has a new novel out called Orfeo, which is a play on the ancient Greek myth of Orpheus. You remember the musician who went down into the underworld and supposedly he played music that was so beautiful that it could make the stones weep. And so the conceit of this novel. Now, Richard Powers is he's kind of a novelist of ideas. He's sort of famous for especially writing about science and incorporating it into a fictional story. And the idea that he's playing with here is that there is some cosmic order to music. And so he's created this character, a retired professor in his early 70s, Peter Ells, who is this eccentric composer of avant-garde music. I think of a failed John Cage, you know, kind of this recluse. And he is trying to write music that no one has ever heard before. As he puts it, he's looking for something in music beyond taste built into the evolved brain. And his idea is he's going to try to find the musical patterns within the patterns of the DNA in our bodies. So he's kind of set up in his house, all this kind of this chemical lab, and he has all these petri dishes around, and he's ordered online these biological agents, bacteria. The local police discover this, and they break in their hazmat suits, and they think, oh my God, this guy is making biological weapons. And so this avant-garde composer, the retired professor, goes on the run, and the rest of the novel is kind of reflecting on his life, and it's all wrapped around this idea of trying to create this music that's sort of like the heavenly music.
Wow. So you've got this 70-something avant-garde composer on the run.
Yes.
That's not your average book.
No, it's not. And there are beautiful descriptions of music, of how
music
can...
Did it change the way you thought about music?
Well, it took me into places that, you know, I'm not a great musical expert, but it was sort of like, wow. And I felt like I had to go back and listen to some of the pieces that he writes. I mean, he writes about Messiaen and Mahler, and it's sort of like it really makes it come alive.
Oh, that sounds great, too. So something there to enrich your musical landscape, too. And we're keeping in the realm of the big ideas, which is your bread and butter, I know. So tell us about your next one. This one is about math.
Math and physics. And this is, I mean, it doesn't get any bigger than this in terms of the ideas. There's a theoretical physicist named Max Tegmark, who's just written a book called Our Mathematical Universe. And he's a physicist at MIT, and this is part autobiography about how he got into physics. And it's partly just a short history of modern physics. And It plays with this crazy idea that reality ultimately is about mathematics. The laws of physics are about numbers, and it sort of goes back to that. You ever read Douglas Adams' Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
I did.
And you remember, you know, what's the secret of the universe?
42.
42. Yes. you know, which of course is a joke there, but there's an idea behind that joke, and a lot of physicists take this seriously, and Tegmark is one of those guys. And I mean, this goes back to an idea that Galileo, you know, one of the founding fathers of science, said centuries ago, that our universe is a book written in the language of mathematics. So a lot of people have been running with this idea, and there are these crazy ideas that come out that Nobel laureates take seriously. For instance, that we live not just in one universe, but there is what's called a multiverse. You know, there are all these other universes out there that we can't even touch. You know, they're in a different dimension. And then it gets even crazier than that. I mean, there's another theory called the many worlds interpretation of parallel universes. And this goes back to quantum physics, which I don't pretend to really understand, but I like reading about it. The idea is that sort of at every moment in our lives, the universe is kind of, or the world is splitting off into different realities. And there are these different versions of you. It's like you're cloned in all these sort of different dimensions because each time you make a decision, it splits off into two different kinds of universes. And I mean, this is right out of science fiction in a way. I mean, there are movies that have been made of these kinds of things. But a lot of physicists take this seriously. And then other physicists say, oh, this is ridiculous. And this is not even real science.
Because but this guy takes it seriously.
He does take it. Absolutely takes it seriously. And so it's a really fun read. And, you know, I confess I didn't read it from cover to cover. I kind of dipped in, skimmed around. And that's probably the way I would suggest doing that. But it's fun to sort of play with these big ideas.
It sounds fantastic. As someone who did really poorly in math, I sort of hope the ultimate reality of the world is not math. But it sounds fun to read about. Well, we're talking about big ideas, and of course, this is kind of the stock and trade up to the best of our knowledge. And you've got some big changes coming up, right? What can we look forward to?
Yeah. Well, this is, we are in the midst of probably the biggest makeover on our show since it first started. And it started back 23 years ago, Labor Day 1990. And the big news is our longtime host, Jim Fleming, is retiring. He just did his last show, actually, about retirement this past weekend. And we have a new host, Anne Strange Champs, a longtime interviewer on the show, one of the original founders. And we're also tinkering some with our format. So for those of you who are, to the best of our knowledge, listeners, you know that each hour we take a theme and sort of explore it from a lot of different angles. We're going to hang on to the theme, but not for the whole hour. So the idea is that we'll have sort of the theme for most of the hour, but then we'll break away from the theme and do a standalone interview. And the idea for that is we want to be able to have an interview that's fresh, that's hot, that's exciting, and to get it on the radio right away, rather than having to, you know, work it into a theme, which can take weeks to do. And then we're also going to we're creating these short, really fun little segments, 3-minute segments of, say, great writers talking about favorite books that that we should all know about, and maybe we don't know, sort of under the radar books. So people like Junot Diaz and Orhan Pamuk and Margaret Atwood, they all have their recommendations. And then we have this other segment called Dangerous Ideas, which is produced by our colleague Doug Gordon, and they're just sort of ideas that could sort of revolutionize the world and shake it up. Wow. And so it's sort of putting in these little segments next to the in-depth interviews we do. And we're excited. I mean, it's sort of it's kind of remaking the show and, you know, kind of updating it.
And when can we hear the new version?
These new shows will premiere this coming weekend. So on the Ideas Network, it'll be after Central Time, 6 to 7. The new shows will be Wednesday and Thursday. You can also hear them on Sunday at 1 p.m. And then on the News and Classical Network, 6 in the morning on the weekends, Saturdays and Sundays, and again, 9 o'clock on Sundays.
Excellent. Well, Steve, thank you so much for stopping by and telling us about what TT Books got cooking.
It is fun, and it's exciting time.
That was Steve Paulson, book connoisseur and executive producer of To the Best of Our Knowledge here at Wisconsin Public Radio.